talk to you and say, look, Rick,
take advantage of it.
I'm paying for this.
Yeah.
Make it your event.
Yeah.
Right. And so you guys get 80% of the people there and everybody thinks it's your event.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, it was nice. It was great. It was a great opportunity to, you know, they both retired last year, but they're still on their game. I mean, they're just effortless lookalike. I mean, what they can do. And it was fun and they were great. And so we did drills together. So we were doing all the drills that they, you know, how they practice, and we had a group. So we were hitting with them. They would jump in with each one, you know, it was just a blast. And then we had lunch. We had a question and answer with, you know, they just hung out with us and, it was a blast. It was a blast.
I think it's a good idea, Rick. I think you got a winner there. I'm just curious. Did you ask them how many days a week how many times they work now?
They're doing some of these events around the country, and that's what they're doing. They're setting them up, and it's $25,000 to get them to come out for the day. So what this one was, they charge like $500 a head for each session, for a morning session or an afternoon session. So this one was not run as, this was run by the club, and they charged, and then I did a sponsorship, and, you know, I did, so they paid for it that way.
Did you do the math? I'm just a math guy, so I.
I asked Dave, you know, it depends on this. I don't know, you know, if they had some bigger sponsors. It depends, you know, there was a couple of, it depends. So, and any excess money they gave to charity. So I asked Dave Marshall, I said, were you able to give? He goes, oh yeah. He said, we were able to give money to charity. So they raised, you know, they covered the cost of the brines and they donated the money excess to a charity.
Nice.
But as you know, I mean, as a tennis nut, and I mean, Dave's been hearing all about this stuff. I think tennis people like myself, a tennis nut, just totally get into that. I mean, it's so much fun.
Yeah. And just think about it. I mean, I'm digressing a little bit. You know, I bet you could do it for charity and get five other mutual fund companies or three.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, JP Morgan obviously is a tennis, you know, they sponsor the Open, but you know, we do a lot of business with JP Morgan and they're a good partner of ours. You know, between them and BlackRock or somebody else like that, you know, to, you know, get five and put it together. Or even if we get, I'll kick in. I mean, like I usually share. Whenever I do something, I say, look, if it's with Ted or Emily, I said, look, we're partners. I don't want it all.
Could get them $10,000 each and get three mutual fund companies. You got $30,000 and now you got five for charity. And then the firm puts in 10,
yeah.
And you know, now you got 15 for charity and so forth.
Well, I think that might be the way to do it. I was sort of thinking about that, but I think that could be our event, Dave. And then if we could do the charity, we can get, cause they even had the local, well, again, down in Delaware, but they had the local television station come and, you know, do some promos with the Bryans and, it was pretty cool. And you're right. If we did it at Philly Cricket and then had a Philly, there's an Arthur Ashe Foundation down there for the, you know, inner city kids, all that good stuff. So this could happen, and we just had a good connection, and the fact that he is already a UBS client. Now he's out in LA, but who cares, right?
Is his brother?
No, so there's opportunity, right?
Right.
So it was good. So, but I think that could be. I mean, that is, you know, for me, it's stepping up, but I think it's probably doable. With a couple of those partners.
I think it'd be great fun. And you raise $150,000 and, you know, you could do that. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easy. You know, check and see what they do now for the Arthur Ashe Foundation. And if there's another charity like,
yeah.
The first tee is for golf and,
yeah.
You know, there's gotta be a first tee for tennis. Kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's Arthur Ashe. They have a facility in Philadelphia. And then there's this other thing called NJTL, National Junior Tennis League, or NJ, I forget exactly what, but it's NJTL, and it's all about inner city kids. And it's nutrition, it's education, and it's all those things for the kids that don't have a place to go after school. And so there's, that's the other one that's.
You might, before you get all in the planning stages, call one or both of those and just say, look, I'm just thinking about this. What are you guys doing? You know, what's your fundraising look like? Would this fit in? What would be a good time of year? And just listen to them.
Yeah.
And they would have a donor list that they could invite that would be a great fundraiser for you personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now you're meeting all the tennis freaks in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
That donate to tennis, love tennis, and would be great clients. You'd have a lot in common.
That's actually a very good idea. Yeah, I have to really think because the
Bryant brothers, that's, you know, that's new for them. This is a new, you know, this is graduation for them. They graduated from the circuit now, and they're going to be a hot name in terms of, you know, they're too busy playing tournaments to be doing this stuff. Now they have time. And they have an inclination, and maybe they want to do it because they're interested. I mean, you figure out what their charity is.
Well, they have their own. They have their own foundation. They did tell me that they have the Bryant Brothers Foundation, which I guess they serve many different ones. I guess we could find out more about that too.
Exactly. Maybe they want to give to this from their foundation. You know, they got to, you know, I've got a foundation. We meet and we decide where their money's going. You know, we think ahead of time, you know, 6 months, a year ahead, where that money's going. And then each member of the board presents a proposal onto where they want to spend the money. So every foundation has got to do that, including theirs.
Yep.
So they have to give money away.
So that's actually a good thing because right now, I mean, they sort of remember me from being there.
And who's managing their foundation?
Yeah. You never know, Rob. You never know.
Well, here's another thing. What if you did a fundraiser for their foundation?
You mean from the event that we do? Ah, yeah.
Call them and talk to them about what their mission is and their purpose with their foundation, what they're trying to do, and talk to them about maybe doing an event here at Philly. I mean, there's a bunch of different things you can kind of play off of that, decide what you want to do and just say, look, you know, Mike, I'm thinking about this. I got a couple different ways we could go. Rather than you just coming in and getting paid, let's think about you got a foundation, you want to raise money. You'd like to raise $150,000 for your foundation. This would be a good way to do it. What's your, you know, but ask them before that, what's your purpose, your mission? What are you trying to do? You know, where are you focused? Who are you giving money to? What is the size of the foundation now? What would you like it to become? Like I've got mine is 2 million. I'd love it to be 10. Mm. You know, with 2 million, I give away 100 grand. With 10 million, I give away 500,000.
Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah. Well, I can make a difference then, you know?
Yeah.
And my kids can.
Yep. No, that's good stuff. So I guess having fun doing something that we love doing, but this is the next step to find out a little more. I mean, I got a little nugget that, hey, you know, he's a UBS client. We had fun. The connection I have with them is the coach, Dave Marshall, who is he's the connection. And I told him afterwards, he said, yeah, let's, you know, so he can talk to them. He also said what so they're, as you said, they're graduating. So they're going to do these charity, I mean, not charity, do these one day events all around the country at different clubs because they're finding out that the people want to see them. They want, sure. And,
hell yeah.
And they're very entertaining. They're very, you know, it's not like McEnroe who just stands there and says, okay, take a picture with me and just doesn't smile even or anything. And these guys are engaged. They're totally into it. And I got pictures with my daughter and it's like, you know, it
yeah,
was
I
so
saw,
cool.
Was that Emily there in the center of that one picture?
No, that was my daughter.
Oh, that was your daughter. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So she came by and they said, come here, come on over and get the pictures with Rick's daughter. And, it was awesome. So I immediately sent the same pictures to Ted and Emily. I just told them, I said, we got to step this up. And,
yeah, I think the manager is your key.
Yeah.
So you can brainstorm with him over the same thing.
Yeah.
He'll know all the answers to those questions.
Yeah. But I like the idea of digging more about their foundation, their mission, their purpose, their size. What are they interested in? And then tying that together. And, the other thing they're doing is they are setting up something next spring down in Florida. They want to get all the top double teams in the world together and do like a round robin for like, and the Bryans will play, but and all of the other ones. Now, I told that there'll probably be sponsorship opportunities for that, but that'll probably be bigger because it's going to be a really big event with all the top doubles in the world.
So UBS can do it.
We got to get UBS off of Formula One racing and get them interested in tennis. You know, we have nothing for the US Open. I was at the Open myself. I went up on Sunday. It was great. What an opportunity there. Oh my God. I love it there. I love it. And UBS says we really have nothing. They're interested in Formula One racing.
Formula One racing. That's not even US hardly.
It's you.
If you ever watch the Grand Prix in Monte Carlo, there's UBS signs everywhere. That's like,
oh, it's
been their thing.
Swiss. Oh, there's your screwed up
yep.
Swiss connection.
Yep.
Exactly.
We do nothing for big American sports outside of, we now have the naming rights of the New York Islanders arena.
Yeah.
That was our big splash in American sports and American. It's like, it is a shame, Rob, that UBS, and again, I don't think it does us any kind of service in terms of there's very little name recognition because they want to be a very kind of boutique type firm. But I think it's very negative. And then what Rick and I always kind of struggle with is that whenever we do any kind of sponsorships, it always comes across that UBS is sponsoring like a local event, not like Rick Rogers and Dave Ostrom. Right. It's like the UBS logo. And people, oh, yeah, you're here to represent UBS and UBS is representing, you know, or, you know, some kind of event locally. It just, it's very, the marketing and advertising around the brand is very, you know, convoluted. And I don't think they do a great job in the US. They do a great job in Europe and in Asia, marketing UBS Wealth Management. But in the US, you see very little commercials. You don't see any signage. You don't really see a lot of, you know, again, like, you know, you turn on any kind of golf or you see the JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs everywhere. Even golfers, you turn on any golf event, you have the Marcus hats for Goldman Sachs. You got the.
Yeah, that was crazy. Do you believe how much publicity in FedEx Cup Marcus got?
Oh my God.
Nobody even knows what Marcus is.
Exactly. I mean, but they've spent so much money marketing the brand of Marcus where people are going, what the heck is Marcus? And you keep seeing Marcus and then people are looking into it going, oh, that's Goldman Sachs. And again, I think, you know, a lot of these other firms have done a lot of work marketing their brand. I mean, Morgan Stanley's got a lot of, you know, a bunch of the golfers too, and they all wear their gear. I don't know if I've seen any golfer ever wear anything UBS. And I don't watch as much golf probably as you, Rob, but I watch enough where like I would notice it. And I don't know if I've seen any golfer wearing any UBS.
I haven't seen any Merrill Lynch.
Nope. No Merrill Lynch either.
Merrill Lynch. I mean, you see Bank America, but you never see Merrill
Lynch.
Yeah.
That's
correct.
Gone.
Yep.
So people don't think of Merrill Lynch and Bank America as the same thing.
There's no association. I wouldn't even think about that. And, I probably do more personally, sponsoring tennis stuff than the UBS does in the country.
Let me just say one other thing. You know, the USTA, the head of USTA, I met the head of USTA diversity. I think I mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I've got a pretty good, I got a very good connection to that. So when it comes to, just keep that in the back of your mind.
Okay.
Um, when, if it's a USTA event or, you know, they're involved at all or there's any diversity, it would be a great thing for UBS. Okay. It's just so hot right now. It's the place to be. And yeah. Anyway, I just, I share that. And, they're always looking for, just programs, you know, just,
yeah,
this is what we're doing for the inner city, USTA, inner city kid development, you know, blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
So I
but
think,
it, but I think you're right though. It is, it's like we got to get a higher elevation, not just the Newtown branch of UBS Rick Rogers doing it. I mean,
I think Philadelphia should be USTA sponsor, Bryant Brothers Foundation, and then pick Arthur Ashe Foundation, the three, you know, those two together, you know, Arthur Ashe and the Bryant Brothers Foundation, da, da, da. You know, gotta help inner city youth, blah, 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 blah.
I think one of them is whenever you can get a world class of anything. And I was always using this story about the Bryant Brothers. I said, UBS is world class. What does that mean? It's something that's consistent, disciplined, and repeatable. It's not a one-time shot. You know, we are consistent. We are disciplined and we repeat for our clients. You know, that's what's world class is, doing it over and over again. You know what to expect. We deliver. And when you have somebody that's, you know, it was, you know, holds all the records for doubles in the world for the last 10 years. And, you know, you get somebody and you can, I mean, my thoughts that you can just cross-reference that with our business or any top performers in anything. What does it mean to be a top performer? Right. And, you know, for UBS to be associated with that, I think it's pretty cool. So maybe I'll be the instrument to do that. And let's see what we could put together. But, I think there's definitely, it's an opportunity.
Yeah. Commitment's excellence. And, you know, the worst case is you make it a regional deal.
Yeah.
Cool resources. So,
yeah.
Get Ted involved and, you know, that he can, you know, again, it's not the money. It's getting the event. The money will come. The money literally will come.
Yeah.
You know, if you pick your local mutual fund companies, you know, there's got to be a couple of money managers around that town too that would love to get involved.
Yeah.
Who's around Philadelphia as a money manager?
Well, there's a lot of them are the local trust companies like Haverford Trust and Philly Trust. I mean, they're
you don't want competition.
No, it'd be like, well, I mean,
who else is even there now? I mean,
talk about like a Franklin Square. I mean, they're not really competition. We have Franklin Square.
They're on our platform.
Alternative products on our platform. So that would be, you know, like a partner like that where like you can kind of cross, you know, I'm trying to think of any other kind of local, more like I would say private equity on the money management side. Obviously not. Yeah. You don't want to bring Wilmington Trust or Haverford Trust. I mean, they're competition. No,
private equity, hedge fund, you know.
The bank? I mean, how about, you know, with the bank? And again, I wouldn't say they're competition, but like a Schaefer. Yeah. Like,
they're small. That's,
they would never do anything like that.
They wouldn't do that big. That's a local bank that in Newtown that, but it's
yeah,
a region.
Franklin.
Yeah. Franklin Square would be, Square would probably be the closest thing to a local Philadelphia money manager, but more on the private equity that doesn't really swim in our same pond.
But they're looking for that kind of cachet. That's real good cachet.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see, you know, you know that, right? Tennis and golf. Those are the two.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also like, you know, Susquehanna, SEI, Rick. I mean, I know. I'm trying to think anyone else on the Archdiocese that are they any of those other like, that you have, on the,
they're not local, but,
SEI, I think would be another one.
SEI they're in Philly. Yeah.
They're in Oaks, PA. There are a couple people out there, but I don't think we have any like kind of direct connections, you know, personal connections with anyone over there.
Because that's the one thing Dave and I were talking and, well, that's the other thing. So as Dave said earlier, like I do a lot of sponsorships in the community and because the logo, we have to put logos on. We got to get everybody. I mean, there is a perception that it's UBS office, and it's, you know, Rick is a part of that office, and it's not like, I don't think the general public knows that this is Rick Rogers personally doing this. Dave, that it's just this is UBS, because there's, you know, all the banks do it, but it's, you know, they do it as a corporate.
Well, you can make up your own logo, you know, your own signs. I mean, they won't like it, but you can do it.
Well, you would.
Yeah. Good luck. Good luck with that, Rob.
Compliance,
yeah,
Rob.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Rob. We can't even post anything on LinkedIn without getting scrutinized, let alone make up our own logo.
You can put the UBS sign up and then underneath it, make up your own sign. You know,
well, so. Yeah, it is kind of crazy. Anyway, so that's some of the stuff, but UBS is tight. I just wonder sometimes, and I mean, Emily's not on this call, but if UBS is looking to, you know, we're tight on expenses, really tight.
Well,
our other ones are expanding.
It's always been that way. And all of a sudden somebody gets $100,000 somewhere from the UBS Foundation, you know, and you're like, how the hell did they get that?
Yeah.
There's got to be a foundation too. There's always a foundation.
Yeah. But we support so many random things that are, oh God, I don't know. Well, anyway, but no, I'm just saying in general from a UBS standpoint.
Yeah. Well, there's two ways to go.
Expense control is so tight right now.
There's two ways
to go. Are they going to sell us to, I'd like them to sell us to JP Morgan.
Well, there's two ways you can go. One is through Mark advertising, and they always have money. They're always looking for good ideas. And then the other is charity.
Yeah.
And that's the foundation. And that's, you know, so they're always, trust me, they're always trying to figure out how they can keep their jobs by doing something good.
Yeah, they have the Optimist Foundation, and, you know, if you ever donate money, they match plus, you know, they add. But again, like the causes and what it's going towards may not necessarily be, you know, what a cause is important to you. And that's why, and there's very little that's, you know, again, UBS preaches this whole boutique and local, but I mean, there's really no presence boutique and local, you know, and there's no really options unless you really push the envelope. And I guess that's kind of what we're trying to do here is.
Yeah. And that's all I'm saying is work through Ted. And
yeah.
Get him. He knows where the money is, and he knows how to get it. He'll never.
You know, that's
true. He'll never tell you until you got to bust his ass. You know,
and right?
In a really nice way. So you know,
right. So if we do the legwork, and as you said, Aaron, make it easy for him, do all the work, set it up, and just say, okay, here's what I got teed up. All we need is some funds.
Well, and I don't think you're going to need that much in funds, but I think if you make it a charity, then you're going to get a nice donation from them.
Okay. Okay. So.
But you want $25,000 donation from them.
Yeah.
Okay. And you want $25,000 from each of these mutual fund companies. Now you got yourself $75,000 to start. And then you got to. And then you can make it a community fundraiser, you know, so you could literally charge people $500 for coming, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of different ways you can go, but fundraisers are fun and people like to give and they've got tons of money now and they don't really know what to do with it.
Well, let's see where that goes. That's a good one. And, you know, we have some inroads and I think we just need to, I love your brainstorming ideas between, you know, talking, finding more about the Brian's Foundation and we'll see. So
yeah, I think you could easily raise $150,000,
$200,000. Wow. Jesus. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. You split that between the Bryant brothers get $100,000 and the, what's his name?
Arthur Ashe.
Yeah. The Arthur Ashe Foundation gets another $100,000. They go crazy over that.
Well, also, I guess the other part I liked is finding about, you know, these other charities and getting their donor list to be on the invite list.
Yeah. Easy, you know.
So
you have to find out what they're doing, you know, ahead of time. What are your plans? What are your big events?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to, you don't want to overlap with what they're doing, because they'd be like, wait a minute, we got the ball going on, you know, the big fundraiser, and don't do that on top of us. And
yeah,
so it's just a calendar thing.
Yep. So the other thing, just to get off the next, we got a, you know, a few minutes to talk about. So one of the things that Dave and I talk about every day is that this market is, you know, everybody's getting complacent. Everybody is seeing that, you know, the, you know, my statements just keep going up, but it's just like, you know, it, we're trying to reset expectations, because this is not, you know, it doesn't always go like this.
You mean 30% for 3 years?
Exactly. So one of the things that, you know, we have a lot of new cash coming in, but we say we're going to dollar cost average, and, you know, we'll add on pullbacks. As you know, there's no pullbacks. We haven't had any.
Everybody's dollar cost averaging on pullbacks.
That's why there's no pullbacks.
You know, and everybody, by the way, everybody's hedging with puts. So think about that.
Right.
That wasn't the way it was, right? If everybody is hedging with puts.
Right.
Cost them 5% to hedge. Let's say the whole portfolio for a year costs you 5%, right?
Yeah.
And so do you think you worry if your whole portfolio is hedged?
Right.
For the year. What are the chances the market's going to crash?
It's not. Until we get, you know, yeah, I mean, everybody's worried about it. Well, the other thing is there's two.
Nobody's going to see if you're hedged. You guess what? You don't sell, right?
Right.
Because you got puts. So you make up the loss with the puts.
Yeah.
And you just sit. So the pressure to sell is not there like it used to be. And the question is, how much margin is there? And,
right.
You know, and is it the same risk kind of margin? What if you borrowed, but you bought puts?
Yeah.
Not the same, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just.
No, I hear you. And it's like, but it's one of those things, like you said, everyone's dollar cost averaging. We're trying to do all these things. And it's like, you know, it is crazy that there's so much here. And, I mean, how there's so much cash still on the sidelines.
Well, the question is, if you're up 20% this year and you had 2 years of 30% before that.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to hedge your portfolio for 5% between now and the end of the year?
Yeah.
And give up, you know, end up with 15% instead of 20, but versus being even for the year,
mm-hmm.
maybe by the end of the year, right? We could have a real downturn of 10%, which would be equal to, you know, your 20% up. So, I mean, there's stuff like that. So, you know, you want to be active. You could, you know, just buy puts on the S&P 500 to offset your portfolio. But that takes some, you know, that takes some thought and planning. And
yeah. But it's an interesting dilemma that's going on right now, because it seems like it's easy. Everything's, you know, going up. There's no volatility. And so we're just trying to reset expectations, because right now it's almost like after summer, you know, it's like it's more getting back to business again. I mean, everything was more loose during the summer. You know, we're all, you know, doing, but it's getting back. And for us, though, it's doing some of our personal events, which should be, I still have my holiday event upcoming in December that's already booked. It's planned and we're ready to, you know, last year we had to cancel it. So this year it should be good. And then we might have to, we're going to try to do something, you know, smaller things in between. So it's getting out and doing more face to face stuff. That's really our, goal for the rest of this year, because we're allowed to. Now we're still not back in the office, Rob.
Yeah. And you're probably not going to be till January, right?
They're not saying, but most likely, because they're being very cautious. So, you know,
most firms are back though.
Really?
See, we're back. We just, for our local Jersey branch, we just put a new policy in. No clients back allowed. They all play by the color of each locality. So if you're green, yellow, red, or green, orange, whatever the colors are now for COVID. So our office in Jersey just went back to no clients. And masks at all times outside of if you're in your own personal office with a closed door. And before that, we had clients all summer we had clients that could come into our Jersey office. Now we're kind of going backwards again, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's kind of, but you know, all of a sudden you hear somebody say, well, we had an outbreak, so we're gonna.
Right.
You know.
So what are you hearing from other firms? Is it similar? I mean, it's still.
Morgan Stanley's pretty much back.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, in the branches, at least that right. I'm talking to. Cause I, you know, I just do the Zooms and I see whether they are in their office or not. And they're
right.
In their office. The other ones, you know, Merrill Lynch is kind of back.
Okay.
You know, I don't ask that question all the time. So.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter. Like I said, we've been doing this stuff anyway, and right. it's not
but
been a hinder.
You can't just go boom, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's.
Well, how about referrals and getting, using the, Sea Colony to, get some introductions and any good event? I mean, did you have your testimonial and all that stuff, or was that?
That was the testimonial was at our at the Philly Cricket Club. We had somebody this year. They did not do the women's tournament. They just because the USTA. I mean, those a lot of those challengers dropped off. They did not come back this year. There's some, but Sea Colony one. They didn't. We didn't do it this year. It just because last year was canceled with COVID. This year they're still not 100% back. So I do not know if that's coming back or not next year. So they're doing something else this year. It's not. It's just doing a weekend event, and I'm going to sponsor that. I cannot attend it because. So they're just putting a big banner up and all that stuff with UBS and or contact info, you know, stuff like that. But. So I guess that was always one that was nice and we leveraged it by taking people to dinner. And like, I think we, instead of just trying to get everybody, we would just concentrate on a few people and it worked out.
That was always a big marketing event for you.
Yeah. So it's about getting back into biz, you know, with doing things. And my, you know, typically events are the tennis. Our holiday party, the Sea Colony was one, but that's not happening this year. So it's a matter of just, we're going to think of doing some more dinners with some select clients for the rest of, you know, fourth quarter here. I mean, that's just getting back to, you know, yeah. our face-to-face stuff.
Okay. One of the, how just curiosity, it looks like, you know, Fix is kind of, got down to 6 and now it's 7.5. any info, any news?
Well, I could just say Sam is still holding because obviously he still owns that. And I don't think there's going to be anything until they, you know, to see how they come through trials and things like that. There's no news. I mean, there's no, there's nothing on the horizon for that. You know, I was actually looking at that recently and there's, I think a couple firms that do follow it. They have, you know,
35.
Yeah, market. Exactly. So it's going to need a little bit of revenue. It's going to need a little bit of, but I guess they're going through some trials and it's about how the trials come through. So
that whole space this year, Rob, has been under a lot of pressure because, you know, you have the FDA that kind of, I think there's just been so much of a focus on COVID, and making sure all the stuff on the FDA side is COVID based that a lot of these like smaller biotech companies and whatever kind of they have in their pipeline that they're working on is just kind of on the back burner for the FDA. And they've been a little bit more, there's been a little more scrutiny. So I think the whole space, if you look at kind of the smaller, let's say biotech index, there's a ticker XBI that tracks all kind of the smaller cap names. And it's actually still down about, it's down about 5% or so on the year. So when you have a market up 20% on the S&P, you know, you have the biotech space that's down about 5%. So there's just been a lot of pressure, I think, on the whole space. And again, as Rick said, it's until they have some kind of news, they got plenty of cash to fund everything. It just now comes down to the actual, results of their trial on, I think it's that PKU that they're working on.
Yeah. So even with, that, so it's a matter. I mean, I have some, I'm holding. I'm not dollar cost averaging into it. I'm just sort of sitting on it and, But the other thing is with Sam, and that's another event, I'm going to actually go up to Boston again for Longwood. They're doing a Longwood Cricket Club with Clark, in October. But Sam's new company, he's as the CEO, his obviously raising money is one of the big things. And they were trying to do a raise, Dave, what, of 100 million or something. They were only at, I mean, they were, you know, Sam was finding it wasn't as easy. And so I'm not sure about that. And like we were saying, if they don't raise the money, I mean, they're going to, you know, that's a tough nut. Sam seems to be okay though. And they just hired a chief operating officer. So I don't know if would have come on board and if they were, but some of the things they're doing, they're, you know, it's a risky business. It's a risky business.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Big time, but you know, big risk, big reward.
Well, that's it. So, but both of, you know, luckily we sold off, you know, a good, you know, a portion of Sam's fix, you know, at 19, 20 around there. Right. But, he still owns, you know, a chunk and he's patient. And that's the good thing. He's hopeful about it. But I think it's just it's a waiting game now.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, so we're going to still, like I said, go, I'm heading up to Boston. Dave can't do as much traveling with the kids. This is a tennis event that I'm going to go up there for a weekend, but we'll do the same thing, you know, taking Clark and Sam out for dinners and with the wives and all that good stuff. So it's just a good, and we do a lot of tennis stuff together. So the friendship continues but it's from a business perspective, it's sort of in limbo land on both Sam's new company and his fix. My other guy, he's lukewarm. I mean, he's not jumping on any offers to get together with the SoFi and he's got how many shares, Dave? A million?
Yeah, he's got like probably $15 million worth of SoFi.
Yeah.
15, I think. Somewhere around.
And he has some lockups, but he's able to sell, but he's sitting tight. But next year he's thinking of retiring and, you know, we put out there and he's interested, you know, but it's like lukewarm. I can't say there's anything that's, you know, he's dying to come over and say, Rick, let's get together with this.
Are you doing any planning for tax changes or are you waiting?
Well, we haven't done anything specifically. We're waiting. I mean, to be honest with you now, remember Dave, when those two, attorneys we talked to in, you know, their insights, what were they were even talking, like everybody was hot and heavy about doing a lot of estate planning around the tax changes, but he doesn't think there's going to be any, you know, the words they're getting, it's not going to be anything drastic, but I think Everyone's waiting and seeing right now. So that's not a top of mind. I mean, we do our tax planning throughout the year as far as, you know, our tax loss selling and things like that opportunistically as they present themselves. But are you saying taking capital gains and, you know, considering?
No, I'm just wondering whether people are doing, you know, anticipating that something will happen and that there will be a higher rate and a higher corporate rate, a higher individual rate. I mean, the step up in basis is a huge deal.
Yeah. But I think the way everything's going now, I mean, you know, everything's probably going to be watered down from what it appeared to be initially. So, I mean, it's just such a fluid, we have our Washington people, you know, looking at all the stuff and, you know.
If you have clients with really high net worth, you know, 20 to 50 to 100 million, right? I think you really should be doing some grats though and Q-perts and things like that. They make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done it. I've done both. And I don't have I'm not going to have the tax problem no matter what they do.
Yeah.
My grat comes due this year and I mean, I started with, you know, a fairly modest amount, And 5 years later, it's three times that amount.
Wow. Yeah.
So I get to keep the principal, right? And my original investment, I take that back over time. And now
this is out of your estate.
Yeah, it comes out in October. I get the last of it, and then I distribute it. We set up, you know, the trust. It goes into a trust for both my kids. My wife gets income from it until she doesn't need it. But it's out of our estate. Yeah, you still have control over the money.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Marcia has control now. Yeah. Marcia's a great investor.
Okay. With Rob calling the shots.
and the kids get the incomes because you don't want to leave money in a trust because right. that gets hot taxed at a very high rate. So, but the kids will take the money out, you know, but they don't have to take any more than the dividends out, income, you know, capital gains and dividends. So it's pretty ideal. And the Cupert is minus 20 years. So you really have to plan that ahead, but we're 10 years into my Cupert.
Wow.
So all my real estate, you know, I have that home in Florida that's gone up, you know, doubled in value. And I'm in Nashville in a condominium, which is already up 20 or 30%.
Nice.
So all that real estate goes into that Cupert, and that will be, you know, a big chunk, you know, 10 million maybe out of my estate, right? I mean, that's pretty good.
That's damn good.
Right. So the average person has not done what I've done.
Right.
Right. I have a foundation. I have a Cupert, you know, so I have those three things. That's more than most people have.
Yeah. But you know, that's, I guess the issue is, I mean, that's not my standard book of, you know, $25 to $50 million clients. I mean, it's just, you know, we've got a couple of outliers that, you know, we're trying to get more of who.
But that guy you're talking about with million shares of SoFi.
Yeah.
Is that client.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
He's the guy. So it's a matter of converting that guy with ideas to, preserve.
Just talk to him about, you know, have you done this kind of planning?
Yeah.
And he'll say, no, I haven't done shit. Okay. How old is, and he's getting to be old. I started this at 50, by the way.
Wow.
So before I had the net worth. So, I mean, between 50 and 60 is when you make your money, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if you don't screw it up between 50 and 70, you make your money.
Yeah.
And so this guy needs to get off his ass.
Yeah. Well, that'll be a goal for the fourth quarter. I'm hoping to see him at the beach, you know, when I get back down there, cause we'll be doing some things and, you know, try to solidify that. And,
I think you just have to, and you, Rick, if you do it for yourself, by the way, you will own it then, and then you'll be able to sell it. So you should seriously consider it.
I know that's a good idea because I haven't done a lot of that stuff, but I don't have a net worth of 25.
Yeah, as you said, you will.
Yeah.
Okay? You will. I mean, so you want to, I mean, this compounding thing is real. It's magic, right? Yeah. You know, you get to 5 million and then you're at 10 and then you're at 20 and then you're at 40.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell? How did that happen?
Yeah.
Magic or compounding if you don't screw it up. So anyway, I just
shared. Yeah, it's time. Yeah. So good stuff. I think we planted the seed just like we've done before with some of these events. And I think, you know, that's where you're good at visualizing or bringing them out. And then now we see how we do this. And I think we got some good ideas to start with and we'll continue to follow because this could be big.
Yeah. And you know, if those guys know, you know, people that have foundations really would love them to be bigger.
Yeah.
Because it gives them a lot of opportunity to then, you know, take care of their kids with some, they can be on the board and get some income from it. And they give away a lot of money and they, it's sort of a permanent way of locking in assets rather than, you know, just what you can spend in your life. So,
well, let's see where that can go. And, this is good stuff. So enjoy the rest of the fall. All up here north. We're, you know, football season starting, US Open's finishing, and all this good stuff is going on. So.
All right.
Bye, Rob.
Thanks.
Great. Got it, Rob.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care.